You're listening to Quality Time.
Into it. Welcome to Quality Time, everybody. Yay!
I hear everything.
Jeremy can hear everything. He is now part of the show via a telephone because he couldn't figure out how to use Google Hangouts.
Wow. Is that a landline?
He couldn't figure it out.
Yes, he couldn't figure it out. That's my my name is Eric Woodworth. Thank you once again for joining us on another installment of Quality Time. I am joined by none other than my brother, all the way from New Jersey, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth. Jeremy, how are you doing, sir?
You don't have your brother anymore.
Okay, that was a... I'm sorry, who's joining us on the show tonight?
That would be Mako. Let me tell you the tales of high adventure from New Jersey.
Okay, all, right. All the way from New Jersey.
Yeah,
meeting the master, John Milius.
John Milius. So you met John Milius. Very exciting.
John, who's John Milius?
No, he is my master. I more than met him.
Okay, got it. My mistake. I'm sorry. I'm a dick.
I see.
Very exciting show tonight because we have a special guest joining us in the basement studio, none other than comedian, funny guy, Mr. Mike Moran, everybody. Mike Moran, welcome.
How are you, buddy? Thanks for having me.
Pretty good, man. Welcome.
How you
to
doing,
the couch.
Jeremy?
Yes, I hear you, Mike Moran.
How are you?
I'm semi enraged because I hate technology because I'm old.
Jeremy's gotten to that point in the age. This is a real thing that Jeremy said while he was trying to use Google Hangouts, which is like the better version of Skype. It's just as easy to use, if not easier. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I swear, people fucking change things just to fuck with me. So you'd be, what's it like living like Clint Eastwood from Gran Torino?
Right.
It's like, here's like a racist. Here's a brand new computer you've never used before. Oh, and let's try out something you've never used before as well. Oh, I can't fucking figure it out because I've fucking never used it before. So
I feel
great.
Like technology is finally getting to the point where idiots like me can actually do stuff. Like it's almost so user friendly now. Like I keep trying to do stuff on the computer and you know what happens? It actually works.
Isn't
and I'm
it
like,
fun?
Wow, I'm a tech whiz. I figured out how to boost a Facebook event.
Yeah, I think Jeremy is just overthinking how technology works. He's not dumb enough to use it yet.
That's right. What it is. It's too much intelligence.
You know what happens when you use new technology and you don't know what you're doing? Okay. You end up in 1955.
Is that...
That's how it works?
I knew that.
You don't have enough uranium to get home.
Right, right.
You don't have enough uranium to get home. Well, that's legit. I mean, those are legit fears that I have all the time.
And you could get shot by terrorists.
Yeah.
A little more realistic. Yeah. I was kind of surprised that was in that movie. I was like, oh, a fun action adventure where we're going back in time and also political terrorism. And,
yeah.
Right.
But that was, you know.
They're Libyans, but they look like Mexicans.
Libyan Mexicans, the worst kind.
right.
So, Jeremy, you went to Monster Mania this weekend. Any reports from Monster Mania? Am I wrong? Did I not see you with a picture from the director of this movie that we're going over tonight, From Beyond?
John Milius.
Wow.
I really wanted to get video with him because I think video is better than pictures. It's actually moving.
Well, it's multiple pictures viewed very quickly, I think.
Yes, of course. Because this is the new century, the 22nd century.
Yeah.
So did you have a picture with Stuart Gordon? Is that who you were with?
No. I've never seen Stuart Gordon. I'd love to, but... Or Carolyn Purdy, for that matter, because she is Purdy. Stuart Gordon, you can definitely tell that he's had a stroke and he's a little bit slow and he barely said anything. And his handlers help him by actually putting the thing that he has to sign under his hands. And
maybe he's just lazy.
Actually, very, very fit, and the other hand looks kind of fat.
So his signing hand is nice and in shape.
He should do before and after photos for weight loss things.
Yeah, well, you can tell which side he had the stroke on, but he's still at least well enough to walk around. But at the same time, I totally fucking hammed it up.
Right.
And did the Schwarzenegger double snakes over my head, and did a lot of Schwarzenegger impressions, which we got a big hoot out of.
Glad he enjoyed that.
I'm sure he probably thought you were Arnold Schwarzenegger after the stroke.
I really let myself go. Yeah,
it's me. It's remember me, buddy.
It's all about the ho-hos now.
Well, Arnold Schwarzenegger's like 90 years old. I mean, that wouldn't be that far of a stretch.
I like that.
A 40-year-old
yeah.
Jeremy Woodworth, I think, could pass for an 80-year-old Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes. I like that Jeremy's master of impersonation. He kills it with anybody who's ever had a stroke.
Mm-hmm. It's a very niche comedic.
Yeah, this guy was a vegetable and he wasn't moving, but I could tell just by the smirk on his face, he actually thought it was funny.
And then the next person comes up and he's like rolling in laughter, and you're like, okay, he was being polite.
I like to play nursing homes with people that are just about to die, and I usually
that
help them
fun.
Die faster because my comedy's so bad.
You're like a comedic Kevorkian.
Yeah, you're like the opposite of Patch Adams.
Yeah, I'm like Patch Adams, except for I make people more miserable before they die.
Hey, what's going on? My name is Snatch Adams.
Yeah.
I shit on people. You know, ready for the grip of death.
If Robin Williams had maybe put on that bow tie and looked in the mirror that fateful night. Got himself a pool of spaghetti.
I'm sorry, Jeremy. Go ahead.
Go ahead. He said, stop the comedy. He said, oh, wait. He's like, he's saying, kill me. Kill me over and over again.
Kill me. Ding, 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 ding. Bow, 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 bow. All right. Well, one more quick bit of exciting news. Our regular co-host, Miss Kimberly Ambrose, just had her baby.
Wow.
Baby watch. 2018 is
boy or
over.
Girl.
Little girl.
Or they.
Eloise Barbara.
Wow.
Eloise Barbara.
That is a hipster name
Callahan.
For a baby.
Yeah, that doesn't get... You know what I expected?
Is it a boy or a girl?
It's a girl. It's a boy named Eloise Barbara. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
They adhere to the boy named Sue version of raising children. Give them a tough name, one that's going to help them get beat up. But hey, in this hipster society, that's a pretty cool name. But
yeah, it's not. So. It goes either way. Captures both demographics, really.
You're right.
You move in a redneck community is going to be tough.
Mm-hmm.
You move in a liberal community is going to be king of the nerds.
Yeah. So congrats on Kimberly Ambrose and Brian Callahan and their new baby. Very excited. I guess she's Kimberly Callahan now. I'm not used to saying that.
Can we call her Kim Cal?
Kim Cal. Kim Cal. 2K18.
Cacal.
But apparently they're doing well, and we're going to have her on the show sometime soon, I'm sure, to check in.
Fantastic.
But she did it,
the baby.
From home. She did only the baby. She's been replaced. Kim's replaced herself by doing this.
Well, if you're going to be replaced by anyone, it should be your own child, I think.
Yes.
Leonard Skinner. Well, that's his brother.
Ugh. Tom Skinner.
No, really. Leonard Skinner, they're fronted by the dead guy's brother. No.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are they good? Have you seen the new Leonard Skinner?
I have not. My friend's band did get to perform with them recently on a festival.
Oh.
We took a big old picture next to their big old gaudy tour bus.
That's cool.
Big freedom
eagle. Oh, I have
eagle.
One more juicy bit from Monster Mania.
All right, share away, Jer.
Got to meet Billy Zane.
Ooh.
And, of course, I tried to give him a pogo t-shirt, to which he denied.
Okay. Mm. Yeah.
Which is understandable because it has the rape joke.
Yes.
And you know, you can't
wearing shirts that have the word rape on it are usually a tough sell, okay?
Right, right.
Yeah, even if you're trying to give it away for free.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
except for that.
So he did give me a free signed Demon Knight thing, and even though he was charging a lot. But
so he gave you a free sign that he charged a lot for?
It was free.
Yeah.
It was $40.
$40 and it's free for you.
He was being charitable, yes.
Wow, that's awesome.
Later on that night, I come up upon a group of pretty hot women, all dressed pretty slutty, because there's quite a few at these shows.
Mm.
And who is standing in the midst of them? Billy Zane. And as I walk by them, he goes, disdainfully, "Frickin' clown." because I was still clowned up as Pogo, which I love just getting in.
So I like it. So he took an extra chance to shit on you as you walked by. That's cool. Wow. I like Billy Zane.
Wow.
You should have gotten him to sign something from the Phantom.
Never saw. What's that? The movie about the superhero?
Yeah.
Oh, I did see that in middle school.
Yeah, he was the Phantom.
It was pretty bad from what I remember.
It wasn't a good movie.
Yeah. Was that the one with the razor blades in the telescope?
I don't remember. He wears a purple suit with like a black mask.
No, I know I had a Phantom action figure as a child.
I think you're thinking of the Shadow.
Right, okay. There's like the Shadow, the Spirit,
and
the Phantom all kind of came out around the same time, right?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah.
But the
I don't know if you ever heard of a movie where he was on a boat. I think it was called Titanic.
Right. Yes, it was him and John Wayne Bobbitt. It was a very good movie. I loved it.
That was Titanic.
Titanic is so good.
That came out in the late 70s. It's kind of a screwball comedy midnight movie.
Yeah. The streets are alive with Tit Panic.
What are we going to do about all these tits?
That's a good bit. I like that.
You giggle like a little schoolgirl whenever the word Tit Panic is said.
Yes. He can never spell it. Mm-hmm. Well, let's get into tonight's antics because our guest is working on a tight deadline to move on after this. Tonight we are going over a Jeremy pick, a Jeremy favorite, 1986's From Beyond. And Jeremy, give us a little synopsis of why this movie.
It's practically the second in the series of Stuart Gordon, Jeffrey Combs / Barbara Crampton films.
That is true. The year prior to this, in 1985, The Reanimator, also directed by Stuart Gordon, mm-hmm. also starring Jeffrey Combs and Barbara Crampton, had come out.
Yeah, and this feels like a spiritual sequel to it, right?
Yes.
And it's also an HP
right,
Lovecraft
right. Yeah,
story.
Right, exactly.
So.
Yeah.
Very
and the funny
exciting.
Thing is, I
think Tit Panic was also written, made by these guys,
yes.
if I'm not
His first
mistaken.
Movie, Tit Panic. Reanimator.
HP Lovecraft, Tit Panic.
Attention, all units.
It was Tit Panic is actually an HP Lovecraft story about a giant monster that comes from the depths of the ocean.
Right,
completely made of boobs. Mm-hmm, Tit Panic.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And if that does seem like something that man would be definitely afraid of.
Yeah, tits.
Good. But I'm pretty sure Ghost Ship had 14 ghosts.
Yes,
so.
Ghost Ship did have only 14.
Never saw a Ghost Ship.
Ghost Ship. It's a lot like Ghost Dad. It's very similar, mm-hmm. except way more murder.
It's like Ghost Dad meets Titanic.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the movie opens up with, which by the way, friends of the show, Jeremy had some audio that he was going to prepare a special song. I might throw it in right at this part for you guys to listen to. So, but we will have no idea what it's talking about. So there's going to be no banter about it. It's just going to get inserted here. Enjoy. So, The movie opens up with Jeffrey Combs' character, Crawford Tillinghast, prepping his special machine upstairs. He flips a couple of switches, and you see these four forks that come out of the top of this machine. They all start to, not all of them illuminate. Only one of the four lights up. Or is it two of the four, Jeremy?
He only tries one at first.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So all of a sudden, all these like purple eels start like floating in the air or whatever. Right. And then one goes and just bites him right in the face.
Yeah.
And he shuts down the machine. And he goes, immediately runs downstairs to tell Dr. Pretorius that the resonator is working. He goes back upstairs with Dr. Pretorius, who already is very creepy in the robe he's wearing. He's already...
Can we stop right here?
Yeah, yeah.
That important moment when he tries to get Pretorius, and you can tell that he's probably in the room masturbating to porn.
Yes, yes. He's quite the sexual deviant, you'll find out later, but right. He's so oily when he comes to the door.
Well, yeah, I realize there is something sexual going on there right from the beginning. That. How could that guy not be a sleazy kind of porno in a robe type of...
Go ahead.
If you're a man that wears a silk robe, you're ready to fuck at all times. There's no...
Yeah. Clearly, he had shaved all of his body hair.
It's just like my dad when I had to go get him, and he's obviously masturbating.
What?
Really brings you back, Jer, huh?
He turns off tit panic as soon as you walk in the room.
I told you never to bother me when tit panic is on.
It's on USA. Yes, it's censored, but come on.
That's good talk. So, Dr. Pretorius and him head upstairs, and they flip back on the switch, and this time all four of the forks are lit up, and you can see Pretorius go, "Something's coming," and all of a sudden all the windows break as purple light shoots out from the outside of the attic to the to the night sky.
Yes.
Next we see a nosy neighbor call the cops, and like, who's this bitch that she just thinks that she can call the cops? Do you have a neighbor like this who just calls the cops every time there's purple lightning emanating from your estate?
Usually the eels are what do it for me. The skeletal dream eels from another dimension. And I'm like, this is America. We don't need this nanny state where dimensional eels are...
I thought I could just summon eels from another dimension. I thought it was America.
Right, right, yeah.
Which, by the way, you'll notice as she goes to investigate across the street, you walk in, he has multiple Don't Tread On Me flags.
Does he really? I didn't notice that.
Yeah, he has a Don't Tread On Me American flag. Wow. Not the yellow one.
You're sure it wasn't just a Metallica poster?
No, this was not Metallica.
Okay.
But he has like a lot of colonial flags that are up, and I was just like, okay, I see. He's about America.
Sure.
America. Like America where you can summon demons from another dimension whenever you want. If you want to. I wasn't hurting anybody except myself and maybe this one guy and a cat.
Right. Well, how would that work with interdimensional law, you think?
I don't know. You know, we haven't really, you know, H.P. Lovecraft didn't really
explore
that.
Does the non-aggression principle apply to that?
I don't know. This is the Magna Carta, never talked about floating eels and jellyfish from hell.
We have to tie these two films together because the actress is Bunny Summers, and the big difference in this is that she's the nosy neighbor versus Reanimator, she's the German woman that has to check out what's his name as he kills the doctor with the juice.
Well, no 80s film is complete
without
a woman that kind of looks like Eric in curlers and a bathrobe. And maybe some kind of that facial paint that they put on. Did she have that in this one? Like those masks?
No, it wasn't a mask that she was wearing.
Not
but
a
she
mask,
could have used
but you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like
the rejuvenating facial scrub.
Yes.
Yeah, she wasn't wearing one of those.
Can I throw out a little bit of a thing to the fans of MST3K? Her other claim to fame is Merlin's Mystical Shop of Wonders, where horrible things try to kill people like a magical monkey. So,
a
lot of M's there.
All right, I like the alliteration in all of her films. Mm-hmm. That's the most important part.
Bunny Summers fan if she was still alive. So,
old Bunny Summers comes as her dog runs into the house at 666 Benevolent Street. Which
I wonder
is
if there's
funny.
Some sort of significance to that.
Bunny.
Did you hear what Mike just said, Jeremy? He goes, I wonder if there's some significance to that 666 Benevolent Street.
Right. Yeah, it's probably just a coincidence.
So she goes and checks out. She sees the flag. She goes to the top of the steps. There is a closed door. Her dog is there. And then all of a sudden, she sees an axe kind of break through the door. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey Combs' character, Crawford, comes running out, scared as all daylights. The neighbor then follows out, but the cops are now there, and Tillinghast immediately gets arrested, and the neighbor is realizing that she left her dog Bunny back upstairs. So she goes back up there, and she sees that Bunny is now eating this, basically chewing at the corpse of Dr. Pretorius.
Yeah, for a second I thought like the dog ass was his head now. Like that was his head.
Now you're just a dog head that looks like Snuggles.
Or not even a dog, but a dog ass head. Like there's no head on this guy. It's like half human, half dog, but no heads.
Yes.
You could almost say that his head was bit off like a gingerbread man.
Whoa. We're coming up. We're coming up to that, Jeremy. So, I do have audio for that part. So next we see, we get to meet Dr. Catherine McMichaels, who is played by Barbara Crampton, the very lovely Barbara Crampton. She's there to evaluate Crawford at the hospital. She does the classic walk down a hallway of crazies, complete with a guy vigorously masturbating in one of the cells.
I felt like this was kind of a pre-Silence of the Lambs scene.
Yeah, very, you know, Silence, I mean? Of the Lambs-y, you know?
Yeah, multiple Miggs is there and everything, but we didn't get to meet his semen this time.
Mm-hmm. Nothing says.
I think that every prison film should have somebody masturbating and throwing their jizz on somebody in a film from that on.
Well, it's weird that this one's considered the trashier, you know, kind of exploitation film, while Silence of the Lambs is getting awards and shit. Which one had thrown jizz?
Yeah, do you think Stuart Gordon was sitting there and like as Academy Award nominated Silence of the Lambs? You're like, I made the first movie, legit movie where somebody threw cum at another person.
And what's the deal? They make her take off her necklace, all these things, and she still has these giant earrings on.
Ugh, God.
The person I was watching it with was like, "Ooh, that's foreshadowing," and I'm like, "That or bad filmmaking."
So, next we're going to hear a little clip of Barbara Crampton talking to Dr. Tillinghast, as he explains what happened inside the happened during the experiment that night.
We saw creatures, these things that are swimming around in the air. They fill it all the time.
Are they around us now?
You bet. Only we can't see them without the resonator, and they can't see us unless they're under the influence of the vibrations. That's why I had to destroy it.
Destroy what?
The resonator, Pretorius's invention.
Crawford, what did you see?
It ate him. Bit off his head. Like a gingerbread man.
Crawford.
Bit off his head like a gingerbread man.
It's weird that he would think to say that within that moment. You know I mean?
I gotta find a good reference. What did it bite its... like an animal...
A simile. Right, yeah.
Gingerbread man, yes! Yes! Do you think in the back of his mind, like, she'll understand this now?
Do you think if you're going through something traumatizing...
I'm sorry, Jerry, go.
Like a chocolate bunny, it ate his head off.
Yes, much better.
I just don't feel like I'd be that creative if I were like in this traumatized state, you know?
The gingerbread man. So, next they go ahead and strap him down to give him an MRI, and Crawford says, "No machines, please." And Catherine says, "It'll be all right." And they see that the pineal gland has grown to enormous proportions.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, part of the machine is supposedly that the pineal gland is theoried to be the third eye.
Sure. I've learned more about the pineal gland from this film than any film other than The Pineal Chronicles.
I'm not lying to you. I know two things about the brain.
Go ahead.
I learned it from this movie about the pineal gland.
Right.
And from The Water Boy, the medulla oblongata.
Of course.
That's the only two things I know about the brain. I know nothing else.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Did I say something extremely racist now?
Yes, absolutely.
We were expecting it at this point, Jeremy.
Right. Yeah, you said you were a lot like...
This movie is so based in science that now we know where the pineal will come out on Indian people's foreheads.
Mm. Ah, I see. That's okay. You're going like the Indian dot. That's where it comes out. I see what you did there.
Okay.
So it's actually scientifically great.
You know, on the Jeremy racism scale, I give that a 3. I give that a solid 3.
Right.
It wasn't
yeah.
your best work.
Sure.
I mean, I feel like you were stretching a little bit there.
You try, though. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people are just sitting on the sidelines. You're out there.
You're on the front lines coming up with these bits.
Right.
That's the important part,
and that's,
Jerry.
And that's admirable.
I just want to know all the Indian people that watch this movie and just shook their heads. They know nothing about the third eye.
That's all right. I'm with the bit. Now I'm into it.
That's the thing that America was outraged about with this movie in the 80s.
So the detective that's there says that this doesn't tell us anything of what happened to Pistorius's head. And Catherine suggests that she wants to recreate the experiment and find out what happened to Pistorius. And basically, with very little backup, with very little convincing other than that, the detective's like... Well, I'm stumped at this point. You pretty much have to. Go ahead. Like,
right,
so they immediately release this person who is a suspected murderer to this very, I'll say, not a woman who could easily be overpowered.
Well, they did
by
give her
guy.
A necklace back, though, when she left.
Yes,
so.
They gave her a necklace
and
back.
And not to fear, she's accompanied by one...
Ken Forey.
Right.
Yeah, or Bubba.
Yeah.
Who, they'll walk outside and go meet in just a second here.
Right.
Tillinghast is left with two choices. He can either stay in the crazy house or he can go and help recreate this experiment.
Mm-hmm,
so they walk
it's
out
like
to
Rambo.
Yeah, pretty much. He's a man with no other choices. It's
right.
stay next to the room with the guy who masturbates constantly and tries to throw it at you through the door.
Right.
Or just deal with some weird interdimensional beings. And if you're gonna ask me if I want to get jerked off on or like go over here and fuck with some weird demons from another dimension, I ask, why not both? Why not both?
You know, it sucks to put somebody through making that choice.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
So,
can I say my other favorite line from this movie?
Sure.
Is where he says, "You know, Mukumba."
Mm-hmm.
When demons fill the air, there's no more room in hell.
Oh, okay. Mm. I see what you did there, bringing back a little Dawn of the Dead. There,
he also makes a reference to a chili cheese burrito that's knocking at his butt door or something like. Didn't
yes.
he say something like that in Halloween? Like,
I got a bean burrito that's knocking out of here. I'm gonna have to work on this for a little bit. Yeah, he bears down.
Yeah.
He does actually say this in the movie. He goes, "Hey, no worries. I used to play football, and we were all crazy." Oh, all right.
Yeah, what football team was he playing for?
The Oakland Maniacs.
Right, yeah. Yeah, what did he really mean by that?
I don't know.
Yeah, there was, Tom who would masturbate in the corner and Bill who couldn't stop counting footballs and, like, we were all crazy.
Yeah. Well, I think what he's referring to is how football back then this movie was so ahead of its time. It was already acknowledging the dangers of playing football and the cranial
this
damage
was like
that
concussion
it can do.
Concussion.
Yeah.
With Will Smith.
That's basically what he is. He's basically an African doctor who is trying to blow the
lid
off of this.
Always stealing the steam from the black men giving it to Will Smith.
What he was trying to say is that football players kill people every other day. It's just that every once in a while they get caught.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
So they head back.
They have a 97% chance success rate.
So they head back to Benevolent Street, and a.k.a. the Pistorius Foundation, and Crawford is already panicking. Bubba goes in first and trips over some electrical cables, and Crawford explains that...
Did you notice he was carrying, like, his weights with him? That was his luggage. He had a bar with him. And
I gotta get swole all the time where I go. So he ends up tripping over these electrical cables, and Crawford explains that they rewired the whole house. We needed more power.
Yeah, and they put that gigantic... computer from like the 40s in the attic. Not the basement.
Let's put this in the most convenient place.
They had a perfectly good basement to put that stuff in. And this was the mid 80s. I don't think people were using those Batman computers anymore, were they?
They clearly had access to an Apple IIe at this point.
Right,
why even do this?
You could have been playing Duck Hunt by now.
Yeah.
You gotta fill up a room with a big tinfoil shiny metal bleeping computer.
Exactly. Bubba and Catherine then go to the basement to go flip the electrical circuit breaker and power up the house. Now, they head upstairs, and Bubba is now in Pretorius's sex dungeon room, watching some homemade, good old-fashioned homemade porn.
Right, yeah, yeah. At which point, I believe he yells, "Now you kiss me."
Yes, yes.
Which I thought was actually kind of tender.
Yeah, for such a violent sexual act that he's doing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is pretty nice.
Yeah, that was. I guess he didn't really understand how S&M works.
Yeah, yeah. Now you gotta kiss me. That's a
right. Yeah.
What a fun S&M.
Maybe a little
game.
Cuddling right in between the.
By the way,
spankings.
Also, I thought it was kind of weird how long he just watched it with this lady that walked in. Like, I feel like
I know. He's like, this is very concerning.
I've met you 5 minutes ago. This is evidence, though. If you could please be respectful.
No, not yet. I'm still very disturbed. I just think we need to examine this a little further.
He's very comfortable with this on. She's the one who has to initiate turning it off. And you can see it in his eyes, like, man.
All right.
Can't watch any homemade porn now.
Wish the internet existed.
So, in the attic, Crawford stands poised with an axe.
Mm-hmm. Poised.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I put that in there.
Did you?
I never used the word poise. I was like, I'm gonna put poise. I'm gonna put
what
poise
does poise
in a sentence.
Mean exactly? Why not? He just stands with an axe. Why poised with an axe?
I don't know. It sounded cool.
Is it like
though.
Positioned?
Yeah. You know, you hold yourself with poise, and then you're poised with an axe. So I guess.
What do you mean? You know? You just said you don't even know what it means. You know, like that thing that I think sounds right.
It sounded good, though.
If you're anything like me, you use those words, like you throw them out there and you're pretty sure you got them right.
Yeah, 90%
sure
that works.
A little tiny part of you that thinks like, oh my God, I'm almost ruined.
My vocabulary is that of a ninth grader. I'm not lying. And there's probably ninth graders that are better than me, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
I like to use the word sage advice from now. That's been the new one that I've been throwing.
If I disagree with anybody, I tell them it's a straw man argument.
Yes.
And I'm not... And I think I maybe know vaguely what that means, but
oh man! So I like that Jeremy's having a domestic dispute on the line right now.
this sounds like a 911 call in a murder case where they show you what the words are at the bottom of the screen.
So
a lot of question marks in it.
So Catherine then comes over to examine the machine, and all of a sudden Crawford comes swinging the axe, which appears to be at her, but it's actually the axe is swinging for the machine, but Bubba stops anything from happening.
You might have to say he has quite the axe to grind.
Oh, got him. So Catherine tells him, tells Bubba to release Dr. Tillinghast. He's just reliving the crime, which is the most ridiculous thing. No, you just look like he's about to murder you. It doesn't look like anything other than that. Where are you coming up with the sage
advice?
Guy
go. Really, it's a straw man argument, if you ask me, because he was clearly attacking her with an axe.
Oh, man. So, to me, it looked like he was poised to commit another crime.
Yeah.
If you're, that's a good callback. Yeah. Okay, so...
If I had a dollar for all the people that I killed by accident just because I was trying to get to something else I was trying to kill, I mean, I understand.
I get it. I like Jeremy's found. This is the thing he most relates to in this movie. The accidental murder of someone. He ends up knocking off one of the forks during this process, and he goes, "We could start again tomorrow," says Catherine. He goes, "I've already started." So Bubba decides to go downstairs and make some dinner. So
the hell did he make?
It looked like a delicious shepherd's pie, Jeremy. What do you think?
I thought they were dumplings.
You think they're dumplings? No, they were like, it was like a black stew with like all those types of stuff, mashed potatoes on top.
Yeah, I was.
It's a shepherd's pie.
I was thinking like cauliflower or like.
I don't know, but he's quite, I mean, that, in the what seems like a half hour, he made quite the meal.
What was the point of that? Like showing what a good cook he is. It like lingered on the food for like a half hour.
By the way, he's also supposed to be the protection here. He just, all right, this guy just swung an axe at the person you're protecting.
Right.
You're like,
shepherd's pie.
Well, I guess if we're just going to work on this, and he's going to get it working, I'm going to go make dinner.
Really
and he
just nice when it's alive. Cold out. Nice shepherd's pie when it's drizzling.
Yeah.
It's like in Britain.
You understand, they've spent a half hour together, and she's already been he's attempted to murder her once. So he's just like,
right.
No, he said it's cool. I'm going to go. I'm not going to watch this anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. So Bubba goes and makes his shepherd's pie, leaves her alone with a clearly disturbed man. Crawford then looks at the sleeping Catherine as they've been working through the night. Bola rolls up and says, and Crawford says to Bubba, "She's beautiful. He used to bring beautiful women here, but they would always end in screaming." Mm-hmm. And I just sat and listened.
Right. You could have maybe called the police.
Yeah, you could have done something. Mm-hmm. Instead of sleeping in that goddamn attic while somebody's getting S&M tortured all through the night.
Right.
Now, one of the scenes that was actually deleted from this movie was to show how brutal Dr. Pistorius was. Is there was going to be a scene in the opening where he was actually hammering a nail through some lady's tongue.
Really?
Yeah, to like kind of hammer home that he's kind of a psychopath and that. But they cut that out.
So. Was it filmed or was it just scripted?
It was filmed. It was filmed.
So
and
it's a
deleted scene. Yeah, they ended up cutting it from the movie.
Wow.
Can I tell you about my favorite book because I love reading?
Yes.
Oh, I love reading too. Especially the classics like Shakespeare.
Well, my favorite book that's been very popular, it's called The 50 Shades of Pretorius. Mm. Mm-hmm. And my favorite part is how he likes to kiss girls. He's like into kissing.
Yeah, he's so extreme that he reverts back to sweet little things like that. Sometimes he writes little love notes too.
Yeah, I mean he's got away with him. He's got that greasy look that says, "I was an Italian mobster, but I'm reformed now."
Well,
baby.
Any guy that is gray haired but mm-hmm. still somehow in really good shape with bronze skin and no body hair and light blue eyes.
Yeah.
Don't trust that guy.
He's either murdered children. Mm-hmm. He's either or he is a serial rapist. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are the only two things. There's nothing scientific that he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Can I say that if Dr. Pretorius ran for government, he'd have hats that say "Make America Rape Again"?
Yes, mm-hmm. That's a good slogan.
Jeremy, and of course, Pretorius, I'll take that one. A reference to
The Blade Runner.
The Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh, yes.
Before that, yeah.
Yes, I think Dr. Pretorius was actually wasn't he the scientist that, like...
He's the monster. No, you know how people are always like, actually, the monster's name.
No, I was reading something about it that the name Pretorius was that was the guy that showed Dr. Frankenstein the dark
His
arts
genitals.
Or whatever.
Well, in The Bride of Frankenstein, he was Frankenstein's flamboyantly gay mentor who just kind of showed back up in his life. And he was like really evil, you know.
Okay, cool.
Frankenstein was just kind of evil.
He wasn't just a paraplegic that won a gold medal in the Paralympics and then shot his girlfriend.
What?
It's Oscar Pistorius, the Blade Runner. Okay, I reached for that one.
Yeah,
he
was the evil
Not
doctor.
Many people know that Frankenstein's monster's real name was actually Skippy.
Skippy.
Was it really?
Huh. Skip. He's like, I will name you Skippy.
Right. I thought it was Geraldo.
Skippy, stop ripping the arms off that poor man.
Fun fact, though, if I may interject a little bit of nerd seriousness here, mm-hmm. real name in the book, Adam.
Adam, mm-hmm. because like Adam and Eve and
you
stuff
got
like
it,
that.
Buddy.
Yeah. I like it. It makes sense. Don't
Theological,
say
if you will.
He knows things.
Yeah, no, Mike Moran, he's into shit, dude. He knows what he's talking about. So she wakes up while they're creepily talking about her in the room, and Crawford has now fixed the machine. So he says that the forks will all vibrate, and when they do, we need to stay very still. Otherwise, they may see us. So all four forks light up, and the eels and weird jellyfish start like appearing out of nowhere. Bubba actually gets too close to one of these jellyfish and it like latches onto his arm and starts biting his thing.
Right.
Pulls it off. It's not just like a jellyfish. He pulls it off. It's got like a little mouth that's like,
it's disturbing.
Yeah.
I feel like they got the imagery right. Like, I feel like that's Lovecraft type of monster imagery.
Yeah, exactly.
That like pseudo sexual kind of sea monster thing.
Yeah, filled with semen. Mm. So then as it all as everything is glowing everywhere, we get to meet an old friend. It's none other than Dr. Pistorius back in the room with this audio clip here.
Crawford.
No.
is it?
Show yourself.
Welcome home, Crawford. I'm glad you came back. Who's the lovely woman?
It can't be you.
Dr. Pretorius?
You have me at a disadvantage, my dear. Crawford, where are your manners? Bring your friend to me.
Okay, I'm going to pause it right there. I like that he's already a sleazeball. Like, the second he's been to another dimension,
he doesn't waste any time.
The first second he's brought back, he's just like, oh, look at this sweet piece of ass that's walked in. Please, bring her before me. And he's fully nude.
Average guy, man. Average guy. You just discover the secrets of interdimensional travel. The first thing you think about, boobs.
I like that he probably had a choice to put clothes on. He was just like, no, I must show them my beautiful, fuckable, oiled body.
Yeah, they're like, oh, so I guess clothes can't go through it. No, they can.
Oops, sorry, didn't hear it.
I thought we were doing Terminator rules.
I've become the master of, like, this dimension, but it's like, oh, wait, I'd like to, like, suck her entire head, like, right this second.
All right, let's hear the rest of this audio clip.
I saw you die.
No, not die. Just pass.
It was horrible.
A necessary rite of passage. Quite wonderful.
Where have you been hiding?
Move toward me, my dear. I want to see you.
How
did I survive? I am the master here.
Is it really you, Edward?
It helps you understand.
So he comes over after he asks him to touch him, and he inches his way over, and he reaches his hand out, and it kind of like squishes into his like shoulder blade. It's kind of like touching wet bread almost.
Right.
Just sinks right into him.
It's just the body. My mind is indivisible. Bodies change.
So, after he says bodies change, he all of a sudden turns into like this weird tentacled monster. Tentacles shoot from like his fucking face and like start going crazy. And ultimately, Ken Forey then starts unloading on this thing, and they just easily turn off the machine and it goes away.
Yeah, yeah. Should have shot the machine, Ken.
Yeah. So, narrowly evaded a very horrible monster situation. Jeremy, what's your thoughts of this scene?
You know, this scene reminds me of another film with maybe John Travolta and Nicolas Cage.
Look who's talking, too.
Face Off? All right, tie this to Face Off for me.
The best thing is when he literally, with one swipe of his hand, wipes his entire face off, just saying, bodies change.
Yeah, that was pretty cool to see like all the muscular structure and then the special effects in this movie aren't bad. They're pretty good.
No, I love them. I thought they were great for
80s. The little worm-like things, tendons on his face that all of a sudden come out and start pointing towards them. But do you have a song that would go with this, maybe?
Do I?
Yeah.
So Bubba then goes into the corner and he pukes. Now, downstairs, they decide to make some breakfast for the morning because, you know what, why leave this fun bread? This is a fun Airbnb, you know?
Sure.
You get there, you make breakfast, you enjoy yourself.
Absolutely.
You
five stars
in.
From me.
You know, I loved the BDSM room. Didn't care for the weird guy that was made out of paper mache.
Now, I don't know if you noticed the stack of wicker baskets in the basement. Did you notice that? Like, just weirdly, there was like a...
But that was wonderful. Wicker Emporium, we have all your wicker needs.
For if you're tomato picking in the garden.
Yes, if you just want to try to shit through it and make weird patterns that come out onto paper.
This place really has it all.
It was a good time.
The only thing that the basement, only thing that the basement was missing was a big cotton spinning wheel to use maybe every once in a while.
Right. That would have been nice and quaint as well.
So, Kat is very excited about this entire situation. Catherine loved everything that she saw. Mm-hmm. And he goes, Crawford goes, "We almost died." She goes, "But you faced your fear and saved our lives." And Bubba goes, "I owe you for that." And then she theorizes that maybe schizophrenics are influenced by these weird creatures. Mm. And Bubba then pipes up and goes, "How does this affect my hard on? Like, seriously, it's a serious question." He's like looking at his dick, and he's like, "Why am I so hard right now?" Like, tricks. Oh God, the beautiful.
Again, that's men for you.
God, guys always thinking with
how
their
does
dick.
This affect my hard on, Mr. President?
How is this affecting my 9 tentacles?
Is your hard on better than it was 4 years ago?
Yeah, maybe under Obama. So,
is it the third eye or the third mind?
Yeah. Mm. So
it's about rape.
So, okay. So she wants to run it again, learn more about schizophrenia, maybe cure it. Because she gives like some sob story about how her dad died and like of schizophrenia because the drugs turned him into a vegetable. It's a ridiculous story, but it somehow works. It mm-hmm. builds some rapport. Bubba says no, it's reckless endangerment. Kat convinces them to sleep on it. So in the bed, Kat tosses and turns, and she sits up and she's rubbing her head, and she goes to the resonator in her jammy jams. She touches the resonator, caressing it in a very sexual manner. Mm-hmm. Crawford is asleep in the other room in the sex dungeon, and he's having some bad dreams, and so is Bubba. Mm. So Kat goes ahead and pulls the switch. The purple light paints the room, and downstairs, Crawford's forehead kind of starts bulging in the the middle of his forehead.
Talk
right
about
here.
A case of acne.
Like, oh, this is such a wet dream I'm having. So he heads upstairs to see Kat, and he goes, "Turn it off." She goes, "No, I need to see more." And then they start making out in front of this machine, which mm-hmm, is, mm-hmm. you know, nothing.
I feel it's a little inappropriate, yeah, quite frankly. Know. There are interdimensional monsters coming, and you kids can't keep your paws off each other.
Oh, it kind of looks like you opened a portal to hell. Maybe you should turn that off. No. Well, can we just screw right. around a little bit? Is that cool or no? All right, yeah. So Crawford runs
everybody knows that when you get drunk, you have fun just by reading the Necronomicon. I mean, it's great fun.
It really is.
So this time, as they're making out, they all of a sudden see Pretorius. He's back and highly deformed this mm-hmm, time. Mm-hmm. Tells him to flip the switch off, but he goes, "You all must join me." And he looks really cool here. I mean, like half of his torso is like connected to like this giant arm. It's like mm-hmm. a wing almost. Right. It's a really good makeup effect. He looks pretty badass.
I loved all the special effects and stuff in this.
And Jeremy has a shirt of this, Jeremy.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, my From Beyond shirt.
Yeah.
Same exact scene.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It looks badass. It looks like something that you would see, like, how the Tyrant would look from Resident Evil or something like that.
Never.
And I left it out back in my backyard in the sun for a good month, which made it kind of look like a tie-dye. So.
Yeah. Mm. It's a tie-dyed shirt now from natural sun bleaching. So Crawford runs out, leaving the machine on with Catherine in the clutches of Pretorius. Crawford then gets tackled by Bubba because Bubba doesn't know what's going on. He quickly explains the situation, and they go downstairs to switch the power off. But downstairs, they're met with resistance in the form of a giant fucking worm monster down there.
And you were bored when Dad showed you the fuse box in the basement and how to work it.
So
how did that monster get down there? That's what my question
know.
Was.
I guess
and they just throw like, oh, I guess some vibrations got into the basement or something like that.
Yeah, they just say, oh, I guess the vibrations.
Which I was like, look, you're being attacked by a worm monster. You don't have to worry about exposition right now. You
exactly.
know? Like, we can do that later.
It's ridiculous. So upstairs.
It's kind of funny. The thing that the monsters are already there. It's only the resonator that reveals them.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of funny. No matter where you turn the resonator on, all of a sudden you turn it on, some guy could be sitting there like, oh, shit. Oh, you can see me now. Like, oh, I got to get the fuck out of here.
It's like one of those magic eye posters.
Upstairs, Pistorius decides to give Kat a little kiss as she changes, as he changes and his head splits apart, which is it's pretty metal. Looks very much like the thing.
Sure.
Downstairs, Bubba.
Can we talk about the groping whereas before he starts the groping, his fingers actually become twice as long.
Oh, yeah, they become like 8-inch long fingers, like the fingers of Shaq.
Right.
And then they just start caressing her all creepily.
And of course, they do it right in the camera, right before he goes down on her, and you're like, okay, that can't be good.
Right.
Oh, gosh.
If he stays victorious.
Bubba then goes upstairs and grabs a knife and rushes to the basement and stabs the monster multiple times, but at this point, it's starting to chow down on Crawford. It's basically, the worm is like all the way down, like half swallowed him, and Bubba then pulls the plug on the power and down the monsters, shutting down the monsters, the machine, and releasing both Crawford and Catherine.
Mm.
And at this point, our wonderful guest, Mr. Mike Moran, needs to make an escape. So we'll have a brief commercial break. When we return, we'll return with more from beyond. Anything you want to say in closing? I'm sorry, Mike.
Okay. Thanks for having me. This was a great time. I really enjoyed the movie. It was kind of bad in some ways, but a good bad. And I am on the Confessional podcast. Come check that out.
I'd like to come up sometime, man.
Yeah, you're absolutely welcome.
I know I was invited once, and the scheduling didn't work out.
We'll
reschedule.
That's the good thing about podcasts. You're throwing them everywhere. We'll be performing with Michael Ian Black at the Auto Bar September 9th.
Congrats on that, man. Pull. Hell yeah, dude. So I think I might actually come up to that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. All what right. is it?
September 9th.
Shit, I have a show that Sunday. Night. No, I don't. No, I have a show one on the 8th.
Okay.
I think I can make a Sunday show.
Come on out, brother.
I think I'm going to come up to that one. Sweet. That's pretty dope.
Christine Ferreira will be there as well.
Have you seen any of the episodes of The State, the MTV show that was, like, ancient that he was first on?
Yes.
That was awesome. All right, Mike, thanks for coming in, dude. We'll be back after this commercial break. Man. Thanks.
Bye, Jeremy.
Jealousy, revenge, and a movie stunt gone horribly wrong. Hi, it's Justin from the 98 Rock Morning Show, and I'm not describing my weekend. I'm talking about the newest murder mystery from Die Laughing Productions, Halloween Whodunit. You've seen me play detective, a reality TV show judge, and even Marty McFly. Well, this time, I play M. Night Shyamalan, the world's most celebrated film director, working on his new horror project. When someone is killed on the movie set, I go from directing the actors and cameramen to directing a murder investigation. And as always, you can play a part in solving the crime too, and maybe even play one of the suspects. Be a part of the mayhem and hilarity for which Die Laughing Productions has become renowned. Halloween Whodunit, don't miss it.
Next performance, Halloween night at the DC Improv. For more information on upcoming show dates, please visit DieLaughingProductions.com.
And we're back with more quality time. Mike Moran is gone because we got the episode started and he needed to leave, and now we're here. God, Jeremy, what are we going to do?
It's not like we didn't do it for just mano a mano for many a month.
Yeah, just like when we were boys, mano a mano.
Turn up the funny.
So, let's hop right back into it. Crawford, has now lost his hair and is like completely hairless.
Sucked off by the worm within seconds.
Yeah, I like it. It was a Nair worm. It just removed all of his hair, and it made him smell real funny.
It wasn't the greatest, special effects, because obviously he had a little bit of clothing patches still attached to his body after the worm had, like, sucked him off or, like, burnt it off with acid or something, so that was good for a laugh.
I did. He looks very much like the guy from the movie Powder now, you know? Very powdery. So
I think you're thinking Boondock Saints.
Yes, he is from Boondock Saints. Same actor, same actor. It took me a while to figure that out, actually. So Bubba is ready to leave, but Catherine still wants more. She seems to have been, her mind has been altered a bit, much like Crawford's mind has been altered. So in the sex dungeon bedroom, she examines all of Pretorius's stuff. Crawford lays passed out on the bed in the room, and she starts rubbing and smelling the leather suits and wardrobe and touching herself. And let's face it, this was the real reason Barbara Crampton was even in this film. So Catherine then puts on a dominatrix outfit as Crawford is passed out. She then starts caressing Crawford's damaged, passed-out body, then touches his D, then licks her fingers after touching his D. So then he still hasn't moved, though. He's still asleep. Like, somebody comes over, touches his dick in a dominatrix outfit, doesn't move the needle for him at all. She then straddles him, and that's when Bubba comes in. He goes, "What the hell are you doing? I told you to get dressed." "I did." And then he goes, "The van's ready. Are you going to go like that?" She then starts to seduce Bubba a little bit, and then he's had enough, and he just kind of flips her in front of the mirror. He's like, "Look at yourself. Is this what you want to do? Is this what you want to be?" Which I don't believe that Bubba doesn't have sex with Barbara Crampton in this. I don't. From everything that Bubba has stated up until this point, he cucks fucking Crawford in front of it. I feel like it didn't run with his character. So,
Bubba is a very upstanding person, even though he's crazy. Yeah.
Hey, if you play football, you know you're nuts. So,
he's not only the best character in Dawn of the Dead, because instead of having sex with a pregnant blonde chick, he wants to kill himself with his derringer. So
that's how committed to celibacy he is.
Yes, because he's that much of a good guy. And then he's like, "Oh, wait a second, I will have sex with a blonde chick," and decides to save the day and go off in the chopper.
Yes. Yeah. So downstairs, we can see the electrical wires are starting to arc power back into, like, the fuse box. And the arcing power is starting to power back on the machine. Suddenly, the wires start reconnecting, and the machine turns back on.
Oh, can I add a little personal?
Sure.
I should have said this exactly. The exact second was when I actually met Ken Foray the first time. I asked him to actually do the line with me where he says, "Look at yourself," and I said, "I don't know who I am." Which is kind of gay and funny at the same time. So, and I would be the Barbara Crampton part.
You know? You are. I don't know what I've become. Did you just go, "Bodies change"? Change into a psoriasis-ridden Jeremy Woodworth.
Pretorius has been dead for quite a while now. I wish I'd met him, of course. Either way.
Hey, but maybe you can meet Oscar Pistorius.
Wait a second. Shoot, I think Pretorius was also in Basket Case 2 or 3.
Oh, man, the classics.
Yeah. I might be thinking of what's his name from Reanimator. Don't quote me on that one.
Okay, fair enough. So,
anyway,
after the machine turns on, Crawford finally wakes up. Now, keep in mind, he's already gotten a hand job from a woman in a dominatrix thing, but the machine turns on, boom, right back at it, right? So,
it's
him. He's trying to start the machine from beyond. Oh, titular line!
Look right into the camera.
Oh, it's beautiful. So, the resonator has summoned a horde of flies, and Bubba is using an axe to try to cut the wires, and the power continues to arc towards the machine, and the flies quickly overwhelm Bubba and eat him down to fucking bones, which is, I don't know why. This was a part of the movie where I actually laughed out loud when I saw, like, Bubba lying on the floor, and because his head and torso are kind of intact, but his legs are like these skeleton legs that have been just all the flesh has been chewed off of. And in my head, I just kept thinking of the Dave Chappelle bit where he's just like, "Damn it, Charlie Murphy, what'd you do to my legs? You can buy a new house, I can eat these legs, Charlie Murphy." Oh man, it was so funny.
Now, of course, the reason that he dies is because the flashlight accidentally gets shined on him versus Jeffrey Combs and Barbara Crampton. So,
and even interdimensional flies still attracted to light.
Of course.
So, Pretorius then reappears, and he is quite the monstrosity. He's like this giant, tentacled, long-headed neck monster, and then all of a sudden grabs Catherine and tentacles her up in his grasp. Pretorius says to what he woke up and let it out of Crawford. Pretorius says, "Wake up," to Crawford, and says, "Let it out." And then all of a sudden, a tentacle springs forth from Crawford's forehead, giving him the predator vision, which he finds beautiful.
Predator vision.
I mean, it's like predator vision, right? Like his third eye basically looks like the predator vision.
I think it's more like zombie vision because you can actually see the brain in somebody's head, but that's the only thing you see.
So. All right. So as Kat is dragged towards Pretorius, she grabs a fire extinguisher that stops the machine somehow. I don't know how it stops the machine, but she just sprays it down, and that is boom. It just stops the power to it.
Did you hear about the new channel for pedophiles?
No, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, it did just start. It's called Predator Vision.
Predator Vision. Yeah. Okay, good. Good bit.
That's a lot of money. So.
You know what? I didn't know where you were going with that one, but I was glad I waited. I was glad I waited for it. So, back at the hospital, the doctor is playing a fun game of operation, trying to pull that third eye out of Jeffrey Combs' head as it comes and it moves around. And they talk to Catherine, and the authorities tell her that she is pretty much fucked up royally. Dr. Block... I'm sorry.
When I used to have a Mac and I could record almost anything off of a movie, one of my favorite sound bites was the sound bite of Jeffrey Combs' pineal going back into his head, which made a and of course Carolyn Purdy Gordon's character going such an obscure sound from an obscure movie, but I fucking loved it. Gosh, did we mention that Carolyn Purdy Gordon, the doctor, is actually Stuart Gordon's wife in this movie?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. So ain't she Purdy?
She is Purdy. So, Catherine explains to Dr. Block that she's sorry, but she needs to leave and destroy that machine. But Dr. Block says that she has just prescribed some electroshock therapy for Catherine. So, Catherine makes a run for it, but she can't evade the orderlies, and they drag her off. And as she gets dragged off by these orderlies, I was kind of disappointed. It's the 80s. We had a clear chance to put the fat boys in this movie as the disorderlies for this one scene, and I'm kind of mad that they didn't make that happen.
No.
How much better would that scene have been if it was the fat boys like, "Ooh, grab her!" Yeah, that would have been badass. You know, if we remade it, I would make sure that would happen. You know,
I would make sure that Freddy Krueger added to that rap, so...
Yeah. So, they drag her off. Meanwhile, Crawford is awakened with his fucked-up-ass forehead, and he wanders out into the hall, and his third eye is giving him sight beyond sight, much like the Eye of Thundera. And
the best part is that he has the Jack Nicholson slash Gomer Pyle look from... Full Metal Jacket with his eyes going up in his head where he's seeing people's brains in their fucking head.
Yeah, pretty badass. So he then is wandering around the hospital, and he goes into this other room, and he spots something that appears to be very important to him. So meanwhile, Catherine is getting strapped down to the old electroshock machine. Doctor goes in to check on Crawford and finds that he is not there. She then goes into the room where he he entered, seeing that there's blood coming from underneath the door. She enters and finds that he's eating a bucket of organs in the other room. And, hey...
Something like a big bucket of brains on the floor.
I like her first line. He goes, hey, that can make you very sick.
It tastes so wonderful.
Oh God! Are you telling me this isn't delicious sweet baby Ray's barbecue in here? Have I lost it? So he realizes what he's doing, and he kind of looks down in disgust, like, what is happening to me? And the doctor says, we don't know, but we're going to find out. And so he stands up, and his eye starts to bulge again as the weird third eye vision starts to kick in, and he all of a sudden bites out the doctor's eye and then just starts sucking the blood from her fucking ocular cavity.
Can I say I have to give it to the Jeffrey Holcomb character in this movie, because truly here is a character that just loves women for their brain.
Oh,
it's the most non-misogynist character of all time. So.
He's so into women that he's only into their brain. I like it. I like it, Jeremy.
Exactly.
So the nurse tells the orderlies that they're about to administer the shock and that we need your help. They strap her down, but she's able at the last second to break free and then escapes to the blue van. Crawford sees her and then calls out in vain, because Crawford then has to hijack an ambulance to go follow Catherine.
Did you just skip over one of my favorite parts of the film?
Maybe I did. Just fill me in.
You skipped over the favorite part where first Crawford attacks one of the ambulance drivers, and one of the drunk that's on a gurney keeps yelling, "It's the snake man! The snake man!"
Yes, yes. Yes, he kills all three of them in pretty gruesome fashion, sucking out both of their eyeballs, and then cracks her head open on the pavement, and the guy on the gurney just screams in terror the whole time.
And as Crawford comes back to himself, just the man on the gurney just freaking out, going,
He reminds me, I don't know where they found that guy, but he's a good, like, solid homeless person in this film. Like, on par with the guy from UHF.
I'd say he's third only to the guy from Terminator. Like, did you just see a real bright light? He stole my pants!
So, back at the house, Dr. Crawford...
666 Benevolent Street.
666 Benevolent Street. The neighbor of the beast.
I wonder where Ronnie James Dio lives.
But Crawford, Dr. Catherine then runs upstairs, and she all of a sudden just has dynamite, which it doesn't understand how this blue van that she got in, it was rigged with dynamite and an intricate time bomb that she's able to set up with a 5-minute timer. It's just, nothing of that is explained. She just, I guess, it was that in the 80s thing? You just rolled around with TNT everywhere, Jeremy?
He stopped at a convenience store, got some TNT with a clock, and just put it together because he's a genius.
How do you make, can you show me where your tri-nitro toluride is? I was like, oh, that's aisle 5. Oh, man, Rite Aid is the best.
She'd been making bombs because she'd been fighting Skynet for years. All she needed was some mothballs and some pipes, and she could put it together in a hotel room. So.
Well, she does this amazingly fast, but as she walks downstairs after setting the 5-minute timer next to the machine upstairs, she is grabbed by Crawford and pulls her into the rape dungeon room and ties her up. His brain tentacle immediately comes out. He goes, "I'm in love with you, and I want us to be together." And she then fucking bites off his little brain tentacle, which is pretty gory and awesome. I truly enjoyed that part. It's like touching her on the face, like, and then she just takes a big bite out of it, like, and bites it off like a fucking Twizzler. Ah, oh, it's so good.
So, and then he's totally normal again.
He's like, oh man, I feel a lot better. Thanks for biting that piece of my brain off there. So she calls for him to untie her, but fucking Pretorius is back again because the machine is working, and he's still a giant monster. Crawford runs from the room to find Pretorius transformed into a cheesy claymation winged creature. It starts.
Oh, please, please don't skip my favorite line of the movie.
I'm sorry, you give it. Lay it on me, Jeremy.
My favorite line of the movie, where he's like, "He'll know. She'll know that you're impotent, that you can't make love." He's like, "Oh, then maybe you can teach me."
So, Crawford is attacked by this winged beast, and it gets on top of him and just starts basically munching his head off, which is pretty awesome. It's the second time a monster has been completely on top of his head. Upstairs, the eels.
Which is a little more than a kiss as he turns his head off like a corkscrew.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So, meanwhile, upstairs, the eels come out of nowhere and Kat's all tied up. One of them then bites her on the hand that somehow sets her hand free. And she runs downstairs to see that bat monster down there. She freaks out. She flees back upstairs to where the machine is, seeing that the bomb only has seconds left. And Pretorius is now up there again. And now we get to see Pretorius getting fingers pushed into... all of a sudden, we see Jeffrey Combs' character, who's now, I guess, dead. But now he's in, like, I guess, the other... realm now. He's in the purple dimension, if you will, and you can
it's much like Knowles and Gary and Fuchs fighting against Blair inside of each other.
Yeah. So he starts basically punching holes through Dr. Pretorius. So fingers start coming out of his mouth, and he starts like punching and kicking his way through like Pretorius's deformed figure, monster body, and it's Crawford. He kind of like gets up and he says, "Run!" to Catherine, and all of a sudden it's just fucking mayhem. At one point, it's just like a pile of mush, and both of like their skeleton heads are like biting at each other, which was pretty cool. Like, I found that very entertaining. Her leg. Just as as the timer of the bomb clicks down to the final seconds, she's able to jump out of the third story window just as the bomb explodes in the nick of time, really damaging her leg. You can see like it looks like part of the bone is popping out near the knee area.
Her knee is actually a Joe Theismann, so...
Yeah, she's full Joe Theismann. She'll never be able to play for the Redskins, but she'll end up being a great announcer for them locally.
And have a restaurant where she sells bone-dead animals that are always broken.
So. Yes. So the neighbors gather around, and I'll play you the last audio clip from this movie, the very end scene of From Beyond.
They'll get you to the hospital.
Oh, my God! What happened up there? No.
Brings us to an end of From Beyond.
You see that Barbara Crampton is not capped on her teeth.
Is that right? I didn't see. She has very wide open mouth, lots of teeth.
I just love her broken knees. They were so beautiful.
Yeah. So that brings us to an end. H.P. Lovecraft's From Beyond, a 7-page short story turned into this hour and 30 minutes. Jeremy, what are your final takeaways from this film?
There's a lot of spankerific actresses, and nobody... The only person that even comes close to Barbara Crampton for me has to be Linnea Quigley as Trash in Return of the Living Dead and of course Night of the Demons. But man, Barbara Crampton, she just is it too much to say I probably spanked to her more than any other woman in my mind?
It's definitely more. It's definitely more than I was expecting right there. Definitely.
And I hate to say that. And I hate to say that when I met her in person, that I talked to her for a minute. And I don't think that I was putting on the creep factor, but she had to shut me down and tell me as fast as she could that she is married still.
I'm married to a man with no psoriasis. He is 180 pounds. He's very beautiful.
Which is to say, please don't go any further, you freak.
Well, good job, Jeremy. I'm glad that you've got a restraining order against you from another star. That's the most important part.
I swear, even the last show that she was at, she still looks fantastic.
Good.
And I even took a picture from afar, and the camera just loves her.
That's good.
So, and then I can't say enough for Stuart Gordon. I talked to her. I was like, "Are you still friends with her?" She's like, "Oh yeah, yeah. I love doing movies." The last movie I think I saw was Space Truckers with Dennis Hopper, and I didn't know it was a Stuart Gordon film until I saw Barbara Crampton at the end of it. So,
he sure does love Barbara Crampton.
And Jeffrey Combs, who I guess you've been using as our shout-out lately, was really great talking to it at the last Monster Mania, and really a friendly, great actor. So.
Yeah, he was nice. He gave us some good audio for the show. We've used it a bunch of times. So, I don't know. Maybe the next Monster Mania, we can get an in-depth interview about From Beyond or something. Who knows?
I'll try again. So.
Oh, yeah. You bet your sweet ass you'll try. You'll bet your sweet ass you do.
What was your take on From Beyond compared to Reanimator?
So, Jeremy, this was your pick of a movie. Now, I'd never seen From Beyond, so I came in with a fresh set of eyes, and I wasn't disappointed in it at all. I mean, it's not... I had this conversation earlier with Mike, and I wish we could have it now, but this follows all of the criteria for a cult classic movie. In a sense that... It's not like, okay, you have Oreo cookies, right? You have Oreo cookies. Those are your, like, that's your thing, right? If thing is Oreo cookies, this From Beyond movie is Hydroxy. Do you understand? Like, it's not quite as good as the thing. It's not, you know, as scary. It's not as funny as Evil Dead. It's not, you know, as fucking evil and like chilling as the Reanimator. It really has like C's across the board, but when you put them all together, it's a good like bag cereal from the bottom shelf that you're going to buy because it's just good enough.
Now, I like the characters better than Reanimator, and I like the jokes in it and the effects and just the whole H.P. Lovecraft story of how it's more than multi-dimensional. It's obviously demons, and he's kind of like the devil, but at the same time, that's why people are crazy, because they're fucked up in the head. So, and me being a crazy fucker, you know, I kind of relate to the film. So.
I like it. You see things that people are seeing, and you're like, okay, yeah, this makes perfect sense to me. I understand where this Jeffrey Combs character is coming from.
How come you don't see that creature floating in the air like I do? Damn it.
Yeah, I'm not crazy. I've changed. And honestly, the special effects, the practical effects in this movie, they're an A+, other than some of the cheesy animation near the end. The claymation, I can't stand for. But, you know, the monster effects for Dr. Pretorius, they're really great. I mean, the way that it's shot, I realized that, you know, it's being shot from his chin up and that he's clearly underneath this giant mask and the neck behind him is fake. But it's good enough that I bought it and I could suspend my disbelief long enough to be like, oh, that's pretty fucking cool. I like it. Because that's one thing...
It's some of the cheesiness where you can see Pretorius in the background with his little head as that is the actual prosthetic monster, where the mouth just pretty goes, "Yoo-haw!" And the mouth is just moving without any real articulation. That makes me laugh even more.
Yeah. I also did notice, I mean, this is maybe a deep cut, Jeremy. I'm not sure you're going to know the reference I'm talking about, but I feel like Dr. Pretorius, all purpled out in this movie, looks exactly like the bad guy from the Power Rangers movie from the 90s. The, you know, the purple guy? Very similar.
I wasn't into the Power Rangers, but I'll take your word for it.
So. I got, you know, it's clear that I fucked back in the day.
You got to relate to the younger generation that's under, like, 50. So
I'm going to roll this real quick. By the way, congratulations to Kimberly Ambrose for having her baby. That's very exciting. Yeah. You can see Kim at Panic at the Deli on Instagram. Watch me doing this on Twitter. The second Saturday shit show is free every second Saturday of the month. September's coming up, folks, and I got a show at Magoobie's Joke House. I'm opening for Justin Schlegel on September 7th. And then on September 8th, a Saturday, I am doing the murder mystery at Magoobie's. It'd be great if you guys could check that out. Hop on the iTunes and the Stitcher to give us a 5-star rating so we can read it on the show. Jeremy, take us out.
Maybe you can teach me.